Welcome back to the Brexit Brits Abroad podcast. I'm Dr. Michaela Benson, a reader in sociology at Goldsmiths, University of London, and the research lead for a UK and a Changing Europe funded project that's all about what Brexit means for British citizens living in the EU27. Over the coming weeks and months, you'll be hearing me in conversation with the rest of the team, with Karen O'Reilly, Catherine Collins, and Chantal Lewis.
I'm really excited because today I managed to get all of the team together in London to record a series of podcasts. And actually what I'm going to do is I am going to hand over to Karen in a minute because this is the first of a series of podcasts that we're doing from the project that are all about the research design. But first of all, I'd just like to remind you who the project team are. So we've got Karen, we've got Katie.
Hi.
And Chantal.
Hello.
I'm just going to hand over to Karen to let you know a little bit more about what we're doing.
Thanks, Michaela. It's really great for us all to be here together. So what I was hoping we would do in this podcast is talk about the research design and the research methodology, because obviously we're doing a very complex set of methods here. But the main thing behind the research is that it's qualitative, and I thought it might be useful for listeners to understand what we mean by doing qualitative research and what that actually means for us in this project. So I don't know which one of you would like to start, but maybe just talking about, you know, what qualitative methods has meant for you in this particular project.
I suppose the important thing is that we are aware that all of these kind of phrases are probably not that familiar to everybody out there, but we trade in them on a day-to-day basis. So we really wanted to break that down a little bit. And I think that also what we want to do in this is to talk about perhaps how, although on the surface it might seem that what we're doing is quite similar to what other people have been doing, for example, in collecting stories and collecting narratives about Brexit, that actually there's a little bit more going on there than just a collection of stories. But there is a value to thinking about this in terms of particular testimonies around Brexit and around lives, because there is something about the richness of the data that we're talking about there that we want to communicate and that we want to get across. And qualitative research for me has always been about detail. It's always been about understanding what people are telling you within a much broader context. So it's not just extracting little bits of information and counting them. It's actually trying to actually get that texture, I suppose, which I've always found really appealing.
That's great. You've said some really important words there. I'll just pull them out. Stories, richness, complexity, texture. And I think absolutely that's what we're trying to do is to represent real people and real lives and real stories in the research. Chantal, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think qualitative research, I think, gives an opportunity for us as researchers to talk in a more in-depth level with participants and in a way that can help to build rapport, and we can understand, well, we can make sure that participants understand what we mean by certain questions a lot easier. I think with a topic like Brexit, I think it's been fundamental that the research is qualitative because there are so many feelings involved in it.
Yeah, and let's not forget that what we're driven by here is what Brexit means to people. And we didn't know what it was going to mean to them. So if we go in there with like a fixed survey design or something, we're not going to find out. It's about, you know, us finding out from them.
I just wanted to come in on that. I think it's really important. The phrasing of that is means to people, not means for people. Mm. And those two things are quite different. So yes, on one hand, we are talking to people about what Brexit means for them. We're talking about the kind of the legal implications for their lives, the political implications. But I think behind that is a deeper question about, you know, what Brexit brings up in terms of what it means to be British or what it means to be European. Trying to understand the meanings behind people's responses to Brexit has been really crucial to what we're doing there. So that's meaning in two ways, meaning to people and meaning for are two very different things.
And of course, you know, that relates absolutely to their life experiences, who they are, what's happened to them before, why they chose to move, how they live. So this would be a big, great time to bring Katie in, because she's been running our citizens panel, and that's been bringing in some quite interesting stories. But Katie, what are you thinking?
Well, what I was going to contribute was, as well as the other things that you have all pointed out about qualitative research, about the depth and other words that you've used to describe it, words like flexibility and responsiveness. Mm. I was thinking about how, if you want to understand someone's point of view in a really deep way, you probably stand a much better chance of being able to do that by having a conversation with them where you really listen to what they say and ask questions based on that, going down all sorts of interesting routes in the conversation with them, than you would sitting next to them in a pub with a list of questions that you'd already decided in advance and only asking them those questions. So I think that's one way of looking at qualitative research in the context of
this. That kind of active listening, isn't it, that Les Back talks about quite a lot, of really trying to listen to that depth and that detail and provide opportunities for people as well to intervene in that discussion.
We're just being really interested in somebody's point of view and what's their life been like up to this point, and what's led them here, and what do they think about all of the complicated political things that are going on at the moment in from where they are, which can be very different for different people in different countries.
Yeah, I mean, when you just said flexibility there, Katie, it made me think about my part in the research, which has predominantly been interviewing people via Skype. Now, if we hadn't used qualitative methods, I don't know whether I would have been able to do that as successfully, because I haven't just interviewed people via Skype. There's been email correspondence. I've spoke to people on the phone. Like, it hasn't just been straight away doing that recorded interview process. The possibilities of qualitative research mean that you can do things around those interviews, which you eventually build up into something recorded.
I've really enjoyed the flexibility of the project. And I'm thinking back to when we started early on and we asked people to tell their own stories. And that was the first starting up of the Citizens Panel. And we got some really, really beautiful stories from people. And they were very generous and spent a long time, you know, sending us, actually usually by email, you know, several paragraphs and some photographs and things. And we built on them over time with, you know, more conversations with those people and with other people and emails and then meeting people in the field and so on. So it has been really, really worthwhile and very, very flexible. And
what's been interesting about that specifically with the panel is not just the images that we have received from people, which have been beautiful and fascinating, but the way that people use language to describe their experiences, we've been able to get from asking them to write, which usually we ask people to speak. And when you speak, you express yourself differently, generally, to when you write.
Are you talking about the different ways that people communicate emotions through writing and speaking, Katie? Because that's something that I've noticed quite a lot of.
Well, the different way that people communicate, yes, emotions in their choice of language, but also, and I know we're going to talk about this in a lot more depth in another podcast, but the relationship between Britishness and language and the way that people, when they write, you choose your words differently, and you, once you've spoken a sentence, it's gone, you know, it's, unless you're recording it and you can listen back to it. It's gone, you know, that you don't get the chance to edit it or to tweak the punctuation or to choose a different word than the one you'd initially written down. So I think analysing that language is going to be a really interesting part of this.
I wanted to just move on a little bit and see if any of you wanted to talk about any particular surprises we've had during the project, because, of course, again, that's one of the beauties of qualitative research is that, as Katie said, we have to be very flexible. We're responsive to the people we're including in the project. And that does sometimes make us have to stop and think again and do things differently.
Yeah, so I think for me, one of the things that's really surprised me about the project, and I think I mentioned this in the episode that Chantal and I released a few weeks ago, was exactly how keen people were to take part in the research and their generosity. And by their generosity, I'm talking about the amount of time that people have given to the project, which, you know, really you can't expect that much from people. But people have been very, very generous with their time. But they've also been very generous about what we're doing. And I was just thinking this week, Karen and I have been in communication with one of the people who's taking part in the Citizens Panel. And we've had a very, very interesting email conversation with her that's kind of sparked a whole host of other kind of thoughts around the themes of the project. So really, the people who are taking part in the project, by communicating with us in a way that is at their own discretion, actually helps us to develop our understandings and challenges us sometimes to change our understandings a little around things. And that's been really wonderful. I'm not sure that I've actually experienced it like this previously on another project.
Yeah, and with that, of course, comes a feeling of responsibility because, you know, you know people are sometimes going through quite painful things or quite emotional things in their life, and they've told you about it, and you kind of feel there's not much I can do about this but be there for someone, but you feel like you should be there for them. But absolutely, they've been very, very generous. I think also, maybe not surprises, but in terms of us having to respond on the ground as we go along, we've had to really think about who we're including and who we're not including. And it's not just a matter of getting who we can or whoever volunteers or whoever, you know, comes forward. But we've, you know, the point of qualitative research is that we represent the various different groups that in terms of what's important to the project. So one of the things we have had to do is to be conscious of the fact that we maybe haven't included as many younger people, people of colour, people with disabilities, and certainly people who voted leave or abstainers. And we've worked very hard to try to include those different types of people. So Chantelle, did you want to come in at that stage?
Yeah, so I came into the project to try and make the Citizens Panel more representative of people of colour. I didn't manage to get UK citizens of colour that are living in Europe to join the Citizens Panel, but I did manage to interview around 30 people. A surprise for me that's come out of interviewing British people of colour living in Europe has been how quickly our conversations have moved on to talking about racism, whether that's racism to do with the Brexit campaign, so the referendum campaign in 2016, or also the racism that they've received whilst living in the European countries in question. So France, Italy, Spain, Sweden, I've spoken to people in Germany. So that's been really interesting and quite sad, actually. And you spoke about having this responsibility. So I've had people talk to me about being physically attacked in racist incidents. And it's like, when people tell you that sort of thing, like it's so hard to respond in a way that's not overly empathetic and sympathetic. Like, obviously I want to do that, but at the same time, I can't do anything about that. They're just sharing with me a quite painful experience.
That takes me on really nicely to something else I wanted to talk about. One of the accusations sometimes of qualitative research is that it lacks objectivity. You know, some people have this misconception that it's merely a matter of just telling stories of whoever you get to tell whatever stories. Did any of you want to come in on that issue around trying to be value neutral and trying to be objective in research?
I think Chantelle's pointed to something really important there, which is it's kind of impossible not to be involved with the people that we're doing research with. And that's as true of the research that I've been doing in France as it is of her research as well. We've mentioned previously the kind of the emotionality of some of those interview encounters, because this is dealing in issues that people feel very, very strongly about. But I think that what we're trying to do as social analysts, as much as researchers, is to try and understand how people feel. So if it turns out that the majority of people who come to us and take part in the research feel a particular way, then of course our reporting of that is going to reflect that. And then from there, our project is actually to evaluate that and to analyse it, not to take a position on it. And I think that's very important.
I think one of the things that is hugely important in doing qualitative research is to recognise how self-critical you need to be throughout the process. So some of the things we've said here about thinking about who is represented, whose voices are going to be heard all through the project, we've been asking ourselves those questions, you know, who's being included, who might be excluded, whose point of view might be dominating. But also we ask, are our sympathies with particular points of view or particular people. You know, certain people can be very charming and wonderful to speak to and very convincing about their point of view. So we have to take a step back from that, and we're constantly thinking about how our own experiences might be influencing our analysis. Something I find really helps me when interviewing and then working back through the transcripts is allowing people to speak as much as possible, allowing them to say everything that might be on their mind in response to quite a simple prompt, because that way they lead the conversation and it's based on what things, what issues are important to them and in the way they want to speak about those issues.
I think that's been really useful. I'm going to wind up, I think, now, in as much as these issues around us almost constantly monitoring ourselves, constantly monitoring our sample and so on, are going to be discussed in a future podcast where we talk about the fact that our research is live research, it's ongoing, it's being undertaken through the Brexit process. I just want one final thing to say, that one thing we also face with qualitative research is that people are much more aware of quantitative research and survey research and statistics and data. And sometimes, of course, the findings of our research can be difficult to present for that reason, because people want numbers. To that end, for those things we can deal with through numbers, we are running a survey, and we hope anyone who feels they can take part can go to our website and find the survey link and take part in that, because of course some things can be measured, and the more we understood about Brexit, the better position we were in to design a survey that we thought would address at least some of the issues. So it'd be great if any listeners can take part in that. Meanwhile, I'll hand back to Mikla.
Yeah, I think the important thing about the statistical side of things, just to emphasise, is we see that as complementary to what we're doing, because it does help us to get a sense of general trends in some respects. But our actual bread and butter in the project is actually getting to that depth and to think about what's really going on at the heart of some of the responses that people are coming forwards with around questions of citizenship, identity, and belonging. Survey data is really ill fit to bring that to the fore. So that's why we think it's important to use this qualitative methodology in doing the research that we're doing. And of course, if the question was different, then there would be different methods. But that's the purpose behind what we're doing at the moment. So thank you, Karen, for hosting today. And thank you to Katie and Chantal as well for contributing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Brexit Brits Abroad podcast, hosted by me, Dr. Mikla Benson, and produced by Emma Halton at Art of Podcast. The series is part of a UK and a Changing Europe funded research project, Brexit Brits Abroad, that's all about what Brexit means for UK citizens living in the EU27. We're really keen to hear from you about the issues and concerns we address in the programme, so please do get in touch with any thoughts, queries and questions. You can find our contact details on our webpage, Brexit Brits Abroad, or get in touch via social media. We're on Twitter at BrexpatsEU, and we have a Facebook page, Brexit Brits Abroad. Finally, in case you're not already subscribed to the podcast, you can do so on both iTunes and Google Podcasts. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back in a couple of weeks with the next episode.